You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
Welcome to episode number 24 of Star Wars Beyond the Films, your Star Wars discussion podcast. We broadcast on Middle Earth Network Radio as well as on the Star Wars Report website. Our episodes can also be found on our Facebook page at SW Beyond Films. That's facebook.com/SW Beyond Films. But enough about how you got here. Let's get the show started. I am one of your hosts, Nathan P. Butler. With me, as always, my stalwart companion and the defender of the EU, Mr. Mark Herleman. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Nathan, how's it going? Everybody out there, it's good to have you with us once again. Can't wait to touch on this little subject. It's one I'm excited about. I didn't think I'd be excited, but, you know. Yes, Whistler, it took me by surprise. I was pleasantly surprised by this announcement. Here at Star Wars Beyond the Films, we ask the tough questions. Questions that have bothered you for a long time, or the simple ones. The simple ones that perplex you off and on. You ponder about Star Wars, and so do we. This episode, we ponder about Star Wars 1313. Consider this your spoiler warning for a game we know very little about, because here we go.
All right, well, starting off with Star Wars 1313, I guess we should just start out by just asking what we actually know about the game at all. This episode's going to be a lot of us thinking about possibilities, talking about what little we know, also what has been said that turned out not to be true about it, just once we learned what the title was before anything else came out about it. Things kind of happen at a very rapid pace, but I got a feeling it's going to be a little bit before we learn a whole lot more about the game that's currently in development. So to start out with, Mark, what's some of the stuff we know already about this game that we can kind of use as a jumping off point here?
Well, we know it's on Coruscant. And we know that Fett is not the character that we thought was going to be the star. We know that bounty hunters play a prominent action, and they it sounds like main characters full-on are bounty hunters. And we know that it deals with the underworld of Coruscant, and by that, not just the fact that they're in the lower levels, but also the crime element. It's one of those things that when speculation first started, I know I was one of the ones that thought it had to have been a date. You know, 1-3 of 2013. How wrong I was. Or maybe I'm still right. I don't know. That one, we have to wait till next year. But Fett, a lot of people thought it was going to have to deal with Fett because of the whole CT-1313 that Fett adopted in an alias in a comic, I believe. I'm not 100% on that.
It was Maze of Deception. And I got to say, if you want to talk deception and self-deception, I never bought into the whole Boba Fett thing. Because to say we're going to name an entire game after an obscure reference that was made by Boba Fett, of all people Boba Fett, in one kid's book, kind of struck me as a little bit unbelievable. I was much more inclined to believe what you were saying, the January 3rd of 2013 thing, though I've got a feeling this game, given where we see it in development, I don't think that there's any connection to a date. I think they just randomly picked 1313 as the level of Coruscant, and maybe there's no significance other than just they thought it'd be cool to use 1313 because 13 has significance in our world, perhaps. But yeah, I was one of those who was misled by the date thing, just like you were, as opposed to being misled by the Boba Fett thing.
I think for me, the Boba Fett thing kind of turned me off to the game originally. I was really hoping that that wasn't going to be the case. And don't get me wrong, I like Boba Fett. He's a character that I would like to see a game based off of. But they were, you know, it's the next generation. It's a whole new platform. It's all this, that, and a bag of chips. And I was just like, we're going to kick it off with Fett? I could see that working, but at the same time, I could see that also backlashing. I mean, Bounty Hunter, while a strong game, isn't necessarily a top fan favorite. So anytime you deal with a Fett, I worry about how fandom is going to accept said game.
Right, and I would say, though, that, you know, Bounty Hunter, I agree, it's not one of those top-tier Star Wars games. I did play it. I played it all the way through, enjoyed it. But yeah, it wasn't exactly up there with some of the bigger name-type games that are out there for Star Wars. But one thing it did well, and it seems like hopefully this game has a chance to do well because of all the different creative minds coming together behind it, hopefully for everyone creating something that's greater than the sum of its parts, as opposed to being something that has too many cooks in the kitchen. What Bounty Hunter did right was its story. It did a very good job of weaving together an action game with an actual story. You know, I can still remember things like the conversation between Jango and Dooku about Kamari Vosa. The fight with Kamari Vosa, the cutscenes that went with that, the things going on with Gardula the Hutt, the Toydarian. I mean, it had some good moments, but I think you're right. Boba Fett is such a... He's almost a cliche for Star Wars now. It's like, oh, you want somebody who's a member of the criminal element or a bounty hunter? It's Boba Fett. Boba Fett is almost a superhero type figure in Star Wars. Because we know he's around so often, he can't die, and because he's supposed to be the best, he can do things that virtually no other character can. He's virtually, and I'm sure he would hate this analogy, but he is, in a sense, a Jedi in everything except for the abilities. He is one of these characters who you have to put him up against foes that are just increasingly tougher and tougher to go up against, because otherwise you've made this character such a godlike bounty hunter that, you know, nothing's going to seem like a challenge. So yeah, I'm very glad that it looks like they've gone away from the Fett thing, although we've been told that the characters that we meet in the gameplay footage that we saw from E3 this year are not necessarily the final characters or character models, and they're not releasing who the actual primary character will be. So maybe we'll have to go back at some point and eat our words, but I'm doubting Boba Fett and hoping not Boba Fett.
You know, you have to wonder if most of the regular individuals in the Star Wars universe are sensitive to the unifying force. You know, Han Solo, Wedge Antilles, Boba Fett. Now, that actually is something that, as we discuss the trailers and the gameplay footage and stuff, that I will readdress. Recently, Brian Bell gave EU Cantina an insider's look at Star Wars 1313. If you've missed it, check out the link in our show notes. It's going to be provided for you. Basically, it's going to run down some of these videos here that we're going to be discussing. We're going to add those links also in the show notes, so if you want to pause the episode, follow that link, open it in a new page, check it out, come back, and we can continue the discussion. Jump right back in. So with that, let's do it.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot that we've seen, actually, so far from 1313. At this point, it's all E3 footage and such. So for the most part, what you've got is there was an interview that was done with Game Trailers and Spike TV. They're unified together. GameTrailers.com, their show runs on Spike TV. They showed a quick interview with one of the men behind the game. And in the process of doing that, showed some gameplay footage both outside of a ship, by accident, and inside of a ship. And then we've seen gameplay footage of those same little areas from the E3 demo without any kind of commentary running over the background, or running over the video, I guess is the best way to put it, in the background. And then we've also got a cutscene that seems like it takes place shortly before the rest of it. And they did show that in the same interview. So in a lot of ways, basically what we've got is cut scene of a couple of bounty hunter slash smuggler style characters, a couple of ruffians on their way to level 1313. Then we've got an explosion that goes from cut scene into gameplay where they're essentially climbing up the outside of a ship. And then we've got footage of an actual shootout inside the belly of the ship. And that's pretty much it. So what I want to do is take these different bits and expand it. We've got bits and pieces of concept artwork and whatnot, but beyond that, not a whole lot. And in fact, at this moment, I actually checked right before we started recording, the Star Wars 1313.com website shows nothing. It's just an image. That's it. And a link to send you over to Facebook. StarWars.com has a little bit of information, but honestly, the place to find most of the footage at this point is GameTrailers.com or YouTube or any other major video game website, Kotaku, whatever. So it's not exactly something where we have a huge amount of material for, but we are sure going to slice that material we do have up and see what we can derive out of this thing.
That's right. And that's also something you're going to be able to discuss by the time you hear this episode. There will definitely be more information out. I'm almost 100% positive. By the time you're listening to this episode, you're going to probably know something that we at this moment of recording don't know. So be sure to drop a comment on the Facebook page. Okay, the first video we have is the interior ship combat gameplay. Now, when I watched this, I immediately sat forward in my seat. You know, I don't have a next-gen system. The closest I get to that is the Wii. I refuse to call that a next-gen system at this point. but the first thing that leapt out to me was the detail. You know, I mean, granted, I believe it starts out as a cutscene and then goes into the actual gameplay, but the way that it starts playing out and we start walking, you know, you walk down the hall and all this, and all of a sudden, boom, something in the back explodes. It looks like they're open up to atmosphere. You see stuff, debris kind of flying past them. You see these big droids come hulking in. I mean, it definitely looks like an epic adventure. The droids are grabbing cargo and removing it, and they're trying to stop it. And there's a lot going on. And now this video, I believe we end up seeing it, three times throughout the different videos that we have here. The first time we saw it was just the gameplay. The second one was with the commentary.
That's right. Of the ones that are on game trailers right now that we checked out before the episode started, you're right. This is one of these things where it switches from we're in a cutscene and now we're in the game. But they have done these cutscenes, at least according to the guys who were interviewed. These cutscenes are being made in-engine, which in non-technical speak basically means the same materials, the same processing, the same character models and everything that are being used in the actual game itself is what's used in the cutscenes. And the cutscenes are gorgeous as well. So in theory, what that should mean is you see sort of a seamless connection between the two. It's really easy to do what a lot of the last-gen stuff, I'm going to say nat-gen, I'm not even entirely sure what that is, one of the last-gen systems would have done, which is really good gameplay, but certainly not exceptionally realistic, and then go into a cutscene, and the cutscene is pre-rendered CGI. It's like the cutscenes that we have, for instance, for The Old Republic that were used in many cases as trailers for The Old Republic. That stuff that's pre-made, and it doesn't look like the actual characters in the game. In this case, it's an in-engine thing, so it does cross over. And you're right, the detail is insane. There's a point where there are sparks and little bits of like sparking. You can see it's hard to describe, almost like firefly-looking sparks, if you know what I mean. Yeah. They're coming out of some damaged part of the ship, and the atmosphere is being blown out because the ship has just experienced an explosion, and those sparks themselves are being pulled outward. I mean, it's an insane amount of detail, and that actually... That is one of the things that has me kind of sitting back and scratching my head a little bit, because there's a lot of talk of whether or not this is even for this gen's systems, this video game generation systems, the Xbox 360 or the PlayStation 3.
Well, they mentioned in one of the interviews, I don't know if it was the actual, the fourth video, he mentioned that they had it for PC. It was a demoed for the PC.
Right.
He didn't say console, and that struck me as... Oh.
Well, that's the thing, though. They do this a lot for demos for video games. When they're first putting it together, a lot of times the demos run on PC. In this case, it is a PC, a high-end PC, high-end NVIDIA video card, and it's using the Unreal 3 engine that's been tweaked a lot. A lot of video games use the Unreal 3 engine in some form or another. But it gets an amazing amount of detail into what they're trying to produce. The question is, can the current-gen systems actually handle something like that? The way that a lot of games are made now is you got one or two options. You can either have games that are single-platform exclusives, or you can have games that are multi-platform. In other words, you can have ones for Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 separately, or you can have ones that are actually across both. The trick to it is the processing power. In terms of RAM, especially on the new Xbox 360, they're pretty close. As far as straight computing power, the PS3 beats the Xbox 360 because of just the way that it's 7 and the one backup processors work, the single line as opposed to dual purpose, all those the technical stuff. But suffice to say that because of the Blu-ray storage, because the Xbox 360 runs on DVDs while the PS3 runs on Blu-ray, because of the Blu-ray storage and the processing power, what we tend to see is that the PlayStation 3 exclusives, when they push the hardware, and not everything does, when it pushes the hardware, can produce some very amazing results, some of which could not be replicated on the Xbox 360. Uncharted 2 and Uncharted 3 spring to mind. They flat out said, looking at storage space with the Blu-ray and the processing power on the PS3, it would have been impossible to program that game or those games for the Xbox 360. The lighting, the fire effects, it's usually environmental stuff, the little nuances to it. And what happens with multi-platform games most of the time is that it's a heck of a lot easier to program for the Xbox 360 than for the PS3. Developers have been saying that ever since the two first hit the market. And what they'll often do is they'll produce something for the Xbox 360 and then do what they call porting over. They'll take that game and retool it for the PlayStation 3, which winds up with them basically being of equal look, and sometimes even the PS3 version looking worse than the Xbox 360 version because the Xbox 360 was the one initially programmed, and the other one is just a conversion over from it. So there's a lot of debates out there, you know, which looks better and all this kind of stuff. Suffice to say, even at its best, the more powerful of the two systems, just from a technical spec standpoint or on performance, the PlayStation 3 with, say, Uncharted 2, Uncharted 3, do not look like they are quite at the level of these clips. They're close. But I got a feeling that what we're seeing now, it either has to be something for the next systems, PlayStation 4 or whatever, Xbox 720 or whatever, or what we're seeing here is a PC demo that looks gorgeous that's going to be scaled back at least a little when it finally hits the home system. Because I can't imagine that they're going to do something this big and make it just for, say, PS3 or just for Xbox 360, which means we're looking at something that'll be programmed, used probably for one and ported to the other, which takes the graphical bar that it can leap and lowers that sucker just a little bit. So I'm cautiously optimistic that this might be on the current gen systems, but I would bet money that what we're seeing is beyond what the current systems can do, and instead is going to have to be on a next gen system. I would also say, do not just look at this and say, well, it's running on PC, we're going to get a PC version of this game, because not all games that start out on PC as demos like this one that wind up on consoles do wind up getting a PC port. And if you're talking PC ports, you can almost guarantee with a lot of modern games that they'll show up on PC, but you'll probably never see it on a Mac. So there's a lot of factors going in here, but I'm betting next-gen consoles, either consoles only or at least consoles first. But that's just me kind of taking all the technical stuff into account. I'm kind of a nerd over this stuff.
Well, that's why, you know, we got you here to explain that side to everybody. I haven't been a gamer since I've been about 24, I think. You know, it's been a while since I've got to do that. But the whole aspect of the in-engine trailer that you were talking about, that makes me think about how far technology has come. I think about early Nintendo, the Nintendo 64, for example, in this case, and the Zelda games, and how their trailers look just like the gameplay. You know, they didn't look better. They looked just like the gameplay, just being played out before you almost. Maybe it was from a different angle or whatever, but the graphics still, for lack of a better term, sucked. And, you know, now we see these new developments in the next-gen systems and stuff, and so is that what we're seeing there? You know, how you explain it of we're seeing the actual gameplay as the trailer, so instead of that dummying down, you have almost like the opposite, a smarting it up kind of thing, where the gameplay is as smart and as crisp and as detailed as the trailers are. Because for a while now, we've got to that point where, oh, the trailers will just look gorgeous, and then you start playing the game, and you're like, oh, that's not so great. And in that case, I'm thinking of the Wii. I've played The Force Unleashed on the Wii. The trailers looked better than the gameplay did for the most part for me. And yet, you know, I don't have these next-gen systems, but you watch the trailers on those, and if you got the TV, the HD cable, you're just like, oh, dude, I could reach out there and grab that cup and drink from it, man.
Yeah, it's very much like that. It's essentially, we are looking at a thing where the cutscenes, the little video segments where you're not really playing, and the in-engine stuff for the game itself. I mean, it's all using the same character models and that sort of thing. Of course, they're controlling the camera angles and zooming in and all that kind of stuff to make it look extremely realistic. And we've already really kind of reached that point in the sense that we have a lot of really good cutscenes now. I mean, heck, ILM is able to recreate using computer technology pretty much anything you want to see, down to the point of people's faces. You know, I mean, and they've got people who are working on this game who, if I remember correctly, if I'm understanding what some of this information they've put out here correctly, some of these guys are the same people who did the motion capture and facial capture of things like the Hulk in the Avengers movie. I mean, they've got all the resources of LucasArts and now ILM, not just providing suggestions, but ILM actually coming in and working with them and Skywalker Sound to create something that is a truly huge immersive experience. And they're using this technology that's been used a lot of times by companies like Naughty Dog. I'm going to keep coming back to the Uncharted games here. My favorite game franchise probably ever, or one of them, that Dead Space, Resident Evil, stuff like that. I'm a big third-person shooter guy, which makes this game right up my alley. But the Uncharted folks use this motion capture that captures your entire performance. They did the same thing with Doctor Who, The Eternity Clock, where it captures your body movements, your facial expressions very well, and then they match the voice work to that to make it a very human type of look here. You take that being already used in some games, and now you take it up to the level of ILM doing stuff like what they did with the Hulk and such in the Avengers movie. Blend those two together and create a game on that level, and you've got something amazing. And I think that's what we're starting to look at here. I mean, you can still tell it's a game, but holy crap. It's a game, but it looks gorgeous, and it, again, it looks like a step beyond even, say, Uncharted 3 level of emoting from the characters.
Now, you mentioned the capturing of Hulk, his facial expressions in the Avengers. For those of you who haven't had a chance to see one of the best superhero movies ever, the Hulk, when he finally goes green and Hulk's out, you see Mark Ruffalo's face in the Hulk. I mean, the way they did that had me just, like, literally tongue salivating. I mean, I'm a Hulk fan, but not, like, my best friend. And so my best friend's passion for the Hulk has always had me watching the Hulk and paying attention. And the way that they captured the Hulk and the essence of the character of how, you know, he becomes one and goes to the other, and you could actually see him. You know, they did it well in the last Hulk to a degree and the one before that, but never to the detail they had. He had a 3 o'clock shadow. And to think about that technology being utilized and captured, it makes me stop and think about, you know, when they're talking in the commentary, they talk about dark and gritty. I immediately wonder, what exactly does that mean, dark and gritty? I mean, are we talking like, you know, one of the Tom Clancy-style games here where, you know, you're sneaking up behind people and choking them out and killing them, that kind of dark and gritty? And that's where I think they're going. You know, they mentioned that before and how it's got an M rating, and that'll be something we'll definitely be talking more up of as we go. But, you know, I get back to that, you know, you could definitely see the dark and gritty, but I can't wait to see not just the visual side of it, but the story, because that is something that LucasArts always does. They don't just give you really cool visuals. They give you a good story to go with it, and I'm really interested to see where we're going to go with this.
Oh, absolutely. I think the facial capture stuff can only go so far. I mean, they did a very good job of capturing Sam Witwer, Natalie Cox, Cully Fredrickson, Adrian Wilkinson, all these people who were back in The Force Unleashed. But this really kind of takes it to another level, but it's nothing if there's not a story. Now, as Lucas says, a special effect without a story is a pretty boring thing. Well, you know, great visuals in a video game without good gameplay and a good story is a pretty boring thing. Although those who play nothing but online multiplayer will probably tell you that story isn't all that much necessary in a game. But again, I take this back to the games that this game reminds me the most of, and that is sort of my benchmark. The Uncharted stuff. People refer to those games with Nathan Drake and Alana and Sully as basically being like, what if Indiana Jones, a Lucas and Spielberg creation, what if Indiana Jones was set in modern day with modern sensibilities, but you kept the same adventure and the same humor? That would be Uncharted. Well, now if you take the Uncharted stuff from the characterizations, the way that they act, the joke, the, was that really necessary? Nope. Kind of an, but we did it anyway, type of thing from the cutscene that we see. Plus the gameplay of leaping their way across the different parts of the ship, the third-person cover-based shooting gameplay, all that kind of stuff. It screams Uncharted to me. And those games really set a benchmark for cinematic storytelling in a video game, where you have good gameplay. Maybe you got a multiplayer mode tossed in there that's pretty good as well, but you have a story that drives it all. I would love to see, and I've been saying since those games really first showed up on my radar, I would love to see a Star Wars game that does that. I think The Force Unleashed came close. I really enjoyed the first game and the second game, especially the first game, though, but this has a chance to kind of open it up and push it. And frankly, they're doing it in a gaming genre that's hard to screw up.
Because, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we can say as much as we want about The Force Unleashed and how, you know, well, I didn't think the Force was supposed to work like that. I'm not sure that it turned out like this. They're light batons because they're not actually slicing through and leaving body parts and blah, 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 blah. But
yeah, they can screw up on the story. You can't really screw up on the gameplay in Star Wars.
But that's what I'm saying. No, but people said that they screwed up on the gameplay. People, when they were bashing The Force Unleashed, most of the game reviewers weren't bashing the story of The Force Unleashed. They were bashing the gameplay, saying the targeting doesn't work as well as necessary on grabbing stuff with the Force and throwing it and all that kind of stuff, and that The Force Unleashed 2 was their chance to fix some of those messed up mechanics or imperfect mechanics, and when they did The Force Unleashed 2, they didn't fix it enough, and that's why The Force Unleashed 2 is a travesty and blah, blah, blah. Hmm. Well, third-person shooters don't require the Force. Third-person shooting games have been around for quite a while, Gears of War really kind of pushed the cover-based stuff on the Xbox 360. You got games like Dark Sector out there with not a lot of cover-based stuff, but unique weapons thrown into it, the Uncharted games, the Dead Space games. The mechanics really kind of going back as far as, say, Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube. I mean, third-person shooting games, particularly cover-based ones, have been used a lot. They are a genre in and of themselves now. So this doesn't have to be, how do we make the Force work? It's, how do you use an existing type of game that you don't have to invent a lot of crap for and tell an awesome story with awesome gameplay? I don't think, I guess, two different sides of this. One, I don't think that it's as likely for them to get as much crap for this as for The Force Unleashed, because I think it'd be more difficult for them to screw this one up in the eyes of even those people who are really critical on The Force Unleashed. On the other hand, though, I think the pressure is now even higher because, yeah, it's not a Jedi-based kind of game, but at the same time, because there are so many other games of this stripe, there's that extra pressure that this must be something special because, hey, it's Star Wars.
Well, wouldn't you say even that the pressure's been high for a while? I mean, The Force Unleashed 2, I felt like the pressure was on even then, that like they really needed to deliver. You know, you had all these fans that were clamoring for more Battlefront, more Rogue Squadron, you know, more Jedi Knight. There have been some really good and successful franchises in Star Wars that people want to see more sequels of. And LucasArts has so far shied away from that time and time again, it would seem. And it just seems, from the fandom side of things, that a lot of people feel like LucasArts really needs to step in and provide. Granted, I think that also comes back to each person's fandom. I think when it comes to The Force Unleashed 2, a lot of people that probably were really ticked off about the over-the-top Force stuff were people that mainly focus on the movies. The movies don't have over-the-top. Mm. The EU, it does. And so, for me, it was like, you know, it was a fun ride, The Force Unleashed 2, but it wasn't like, oh my goodness, what are they doing? This is not Star Wars. It's like, well, I've seen some crazy things in my EU, so all right, let's do this.
Well, you mentioned that there are franchises out there that people want to see continue that haven't. One perfect example of that is something like Republic Commando. And be saying, we want another Star Wars shooter. Well, this is going to be a Star Wars shooter. Not first person, this is third person, but you're getting your shooter, folks. You know, and yet, what happens? As soon as they announce 1313 and say, it's the gritty underworld, level 1313 of Coruscant, it's going to be featuring a more mortal-style character, not someone using mysticism and the Force, but a gritty bounty hunter-type character whose name we won't reveal yet because the guys that we actually see in the clips that we've seen aren't actually the final character models and blah, blah, blah. But what do they say? As soon as we hear something, this is different. This is gritty Star Wars. They're saying it may get a mature rating. This is finally something different that's actually kind of more in line with the darkness of Star Wars since about 2002. And what happens? Man, this game doesn't have Star Wars Jedi in it. If you don't have Jedi, it's not Star Wars. If the Force isn't a part of it, it's not Star Wars. And people are already griping about this game and decrying it because it's not a clone of The Force Unleashed or any other games that are using Force abilities. And I think that goes back to that whole saga versus setting thing we talked about a while back. This is it looks like it's going to be good use of Star Wars as a setting. I really don't want to see this attached to the saga. It would drive me crazy if it turns out this is set around the time of the films, and maybe at the end of it, the smugglers send a secret transmission to the Tantive IV. No! I do not want to see that kind of stuff again.
No. You know, it's just one of those things where as people do that, you're just like, really? We're going to go there? You know, the next trailer, though, it's the ship crash gameplay, and it makes me think about certain aspects of this. You know, we see in the navigational trailer how they're dropping down into the levels. The next one, the ship crash, actually looks like they're still in that same tunnel. You almost wonder if this is all like how when they gave us the first demos for The Force Unleashed, how this could be the first level playing out.
Right.
One of the first things that jumped out, though, you know, you have the action of the character, one of them runs and jumps out, and you're just like, what? The first thing I'm thinking is like, wait, no non-Force-sensitive should be doing what these guys are doing. I mean, it strikes me as like, okay, again, obviously the unifying Force is with them for they're making every single landing, and then the one guy's like tumbling across the fiery wreckage as it's plummeting, and I'm just like, wow, man, he's like Wedge Antilles on jumping flaming ship. And you know, it's one of those things where I look at it and I'm automatically loving what I'm seeing. I mean, you got the flames, you got the spinning action, the backgrounds there. There's a lot of depth going on. The graphics and the depth They literally jump right out of you in every one of these trailers.
Mm-hmm.
One complaint I've heard, you know, and that's what's funny. You know, you mentioned the Jedi stuff. To which I got to say, if this is set between episode 3 and 4, Luke hasn't become a Jedi yet. There are no Jedi, remember? I mean, granted, we know in the EU that some are out there, but as far as the galaxy knows, they're not there. So if we're going to place anything in that time frame, Jedi better not show up. And if they do, there better be a reason why we don't know about them showing up. At least written into the game. You know, it's one of those things. But the other one is the third person. A lot of people don't like third person. Some are they want the classic first person shooter. And I think about Republic Commando. I believe you had the option in that to do either or. You could go first person or Jedi Knight.
Jedi Knight.
That was the one where you had the option of, and you could switch back and forth. And that's what I wonder, is the third person a good thing, or should they have that option?
You know, a couple things you said there kind of sprang to mind here. One being, just to answer that last question, personally, I prefer third-person shooters. I get a lot less dizzy and motion sick with third-person shooters as opposed to first-person shooters. Plus, you get to see more of the character. You get to see more of the their reactions to things, those little things. You know, maybe they're standing too close to the edge and they've got an animation for them going, whoa, or something. You know, you get more out of your character other than feeling like you're inside their head looking out. You know, that I kind of was over that a long time ago because I want my character, I want to be more like I'm playing a game that feels like it's a film rather than, as opposed to, you know, not something like the old Sega CD games, though I did think they were awesome back then, all those full motion video games where you're basically just watching and pressing a button every now and then. But I want to see more of the character, and I think being inside the head where it's first person doesn't do that as well. You also mentioned the issue of the depth that we see. Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 both now can do 3D on a 3D television if you get a high-speed HDMI cable. I would love to see this game in 3D. Uncharted Absolutely. 3, again, going back to that benchmark series, Uncharted 3 was the only one of that series to be in 3D, and it is absolutely amazing. I mean, granted, you know, it starts to be an issue of, you know, what type of disc media are you going to put this game on, Blu-ray versus DVD, but spread it out across a few DVDs and you're set, even if it's not going to fit on one. You mentioned also the whole, you know, just seeing him jump out and grab onto things. That was what immediately sparked in my mind the Uncharted parallel that I keep making. Because that, you know, that is one of the hallmarks of Uncharted, the climbing stuff, the jumping from one piece to another piece as another piece is falling, or you got to move more quickly because the part you're on is going to fall. The fact that there's a point on the demo in which something happens, like another explosion, and he, the main character, who we're assuming is the player character, falls backwards and has to grab hold, reminds me of the beginning of Uncharted 2 with the train hanging off the edge, and he's dangling, he's falling, he's thumping back and forth. The funniest part to me of Uncharted 2 is this moment where, as you're playing, the character makes a comment, "Oh, I'm so sick of climbing, S-word." And it cracks me up because that's, by the time you get done with the game, you're like, wow, that's a lot of what I'm doing, but it's fun in what you're doing. So it seems as though this game, again, the potential is there. They're really, whether we're talking about 3D imaging, whether we're talking about the gameplay being something that is somewhat tried and true. I mean, yeah, it's third person, but I think at this point, I think people are pretty much good on the whole third person thing. Some of the best-selling games in the last few years have been third person. I have heard a lot of comparisons between this and, say, Assassin's Creed. I don't see the parallel there. This doesn't look like a parkour game where you're doing a lot of free running and stuff like that, but it seems like the climbing elements, more like an Uncharted style or an Infamous style, do appear to be there. I'm curious, you know, what kind of world this is going to be. Is it going to be an open world game where you can go and see all kinds of stuff? Is it going to be a much more of a linear game where you just go through the levels the way that The Force Unleashed has been?
I would say it's going to have to be closed. Coruscant's too big of a planet to let you just roam anywhere. I mean, I'd be like, I'm going to the Senate building.
That's true, but I mean, we could do some free roaming stuff in, say, the Knights of the Old Republic games or the Old Republic. I mean, you don't have to necessarily make it so you can go everywhere on the planet, but just to give you a few other things you can do and, you know, other places to investigate. But I think you're right. I think it's going to be a lot more linear, but there's that level of potential where, hey, they can do pretty much whatever. This is a part of Coruscant we haven't seen a whole heck of a lot. We just don't know what time period it's set in, so we don't know what kind of encounters we're going to be having. Nothing really seems to have given us much of a clue of that.
I got a question for the listeners real fast. Now, if you're one of those that do not like the third person, The question I have for you is, how often do you play video games? I'm willing to bet that most of the people out there that have an issue with it being third person and not first person are probably hardcore gamers. People who play at least 2-3 times a day, at least 3 or 4 times a week. I don't know. I just have a hard time seeing somebody who's new to gaming having much of an issue with it. I personally, like, I'm with you. I like the third person. When I'm playing the ship stuff, I want to be able to see my ship. I like watching it roll. When I'm walking a character around, I want to be able to see the feet. I want to know how close to the edge I am, things like that. To me, it makes playing those games easier. So I have to know. If you have a problem with it being in the third person, is this because you play a lot of first-person games? I'm taking a bet here and thinking the answer is probably yes. Moving along, though, the next trailer, the navigation trailer, you know, we just talked about the size of Coruscant. That trailer really kind of gives you an idea of the scope of Coruscant. You know, it's something that, you know, we're always told it's huge, especially in the EU, and yet in the EU, it's like all the scenes when they go into the lower levels and stuff, it kind of like seems like, oh, wow, we're at Bedrock already. And yet, you know, it's always been described as this massive city planet, and it's so huge, the underworld is so big, you're going to get lost, and yet, surprisingly, every adventure we have into the underworld, it's a quick hop, skip, and a jump, and we're all back out and fine. But in this trailer, you really kind of get the idea of how deep it is, and the interaction between the two characters, he's like, hold your breath. I really liked it. You had this feeling, like, as they were sinking, like, I don't know, I've gone caving, and when you get down inside the caves, it's fun and exciting at first, and then you get to a like really tight spot, and you realize how deep into the tunnel you are, and you get that moment of claustrophobic panic, and as the ship was dropping down, you kind of watch the little hollow of it going, you start to feel it, you're like, man, they're really dropping, how big is this city, and for the first time in a long time, I felt like Coruscant finally was Coruscant again, the way it should be. I don't know. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, Nathan.
Oh, no, I think you're right. I mean, this really gave you a sense of the depth that we really haven't gotten before. I mean, even the Clone Wars cartoon hasn't really done too much with this. We had, gosh, which episode was it? There was an episode of the Clone Wars where Ahsoka and Plo Koon have to go looking for associates, I think of Aurra Sing. I think it was in that three-part one with Boba Fett showing up in it, if I remember right. I mean, it's been a while.
Oh, but the one where they were in the little cantina down below.
Yeah, they go down below the surface into that cantina and say, well, we're going down into the lower levels. We're going down where the seedy people are. And you can still see sunlight and sort of see the edge of the surface. That doesn't really scream underworld to me. This, the sheer depth of it, does scream underworld to me. Though you gotta, you know, part of me sits back and thinks on a practical sense, you know, how many accidents must happen in there? You know, what happens if you run out of power and just go tumbling down there? Anything that falls off your ship, it's gone. Think about the crap that'll be down at the bottom of it if people on the upper levels are like, I don't want to take the trash out. Oopsie! Off the edge, you know?
Well, that would explain where Zek was able to scavenge so many parts, though, in his Junior Jedi Knight series, or Young Jedi Knights.
True, true, as long as none of these characters drop anything that lands on his head.
Well, he shouldn't be alive by then.
Well, we don't know. We haven't the foggiest idea when this takes place.
That's true. That is true. That is another thing. This is actually a complaint I have. It doesn't matter who we're talking about here. Games, the movies, the videos, the films. If you don't know when it is set, that to me is just, I don't know. I mean, you're a timeline guy. Doesn't that just drive you up a wall? You don't have it set in time? So at least have it narrowed down a little bit. Give me like a 20-year gap or something. I don't know. It boggles my mind that they do that so often, especially when it comes to like the tour game, where you think about how that got so crazy. Well, it could be around here. It could be 100 years from here. It's like, well, let's really narrow this down a little bit before we really start pushing these new stories, because that's where I get worried about. New stories will come along and they think they have it down and they're like, well, actually, George wanted to do this. And even though we were hinting that we were going to do that, we kind of went completely in the face of that. And yeah, you and I wrote 4 books that kind of led us to believe that, yeah, Owen was actually Obi-Wan's brother, but he's not. Sorry about that.
Well, yeah, but I think in this case, it's not so much that they don't know, it's just that we don't know yet. You know, just like we don't know the name of the main character yet. The same thing with the Old Republic. The Old Republic, they seem to actually know when it took place. In fact, it's kind of been pinned down now. I don't remember the number off the top of my head, but they have pretty much pinned down when the Old Republic game is taking place. And yeah, at the beginning we didn't know, and because they didn't want to give up a bunch of stuff about the game, they weren't going to let us know immediately, so we were kind of like, where the heck does Fate Alliance take place? Oh, it's right before the game, that's lovely, when is that? The Lost Sons, oh, it's parallel to the game, okay, when is that? and all that kind of stuff. But that's a matter of they took a while to actually tell us, but it's not like they changed it midway. This isn't like Fate of the Jedi. In this case, I think it's probably just a matter of they know and we don't, and as things trickle out, we'll know better. I mean, it's the same thing as The Force Unleashed. We knew it was shortly before. Turns out you got one part of the game, then a 6-month gap, then another part of the game, and a 6-month gap, and another part, and then a year after that last part, there's The Force Unleashed 2. You know, you kind of take it, as Cade Skywalker would say, we take what is given. And in this case, I expect we are going to be given the information, it's just it's not there yet. I mean, we're spending an entire episode talking about, like, 3 or 4 clips. There just isn't that much for us to know yet, unfortunately. Now, let me start with something that you mentioned actually earlier. You said the M rating. I think I mentioned it too, the whole M rating thing. There's that moment in the gameplay footage where this, we'll call him your character, because heck if we know what his name is, but the first bounty hunter guy, your character, he's ducking behind a crate, and he pulls a classic third-person shooter kind of melee move, which is that there's an enemy on the other side of the crate, and presumably based on a context clue, he can hit a button, and he reaches over, grabs that character, pulls him over the crate onto the ground, and pulls the classic third-person shooter snap of the neck. And if this was any other third-person shooter, I think everybody would just be saying, yep, I kind of expected that. But this is Star Wars, and that is kind of dark. Granted, you can force choke and snap the neck on beings, but it's mostly been force-based violence of snapping of necks. Now it's getting his hands dirty, and this isn't a dark Jedi. This isn't a Jedi. This is someone bereft, as far as we know, of force powers doing this with his bare hands. You said, does this go too mature? Was something we've been talking about before the show. You've got kids. I would say, you know, it's what I'd expect of a third-person shooter. If they want to make it mature, they kind of got to have the more gritty stuff like this in it. But you've got kids. Do you think this is something that, given that type of content, that kids should even be playing if it's going to be M-rated like that?
You know, it depends on how I'm approaching it with, you know, in this case, my son. He'd be the one that would want to play this kind of game. And now he's 8. And I don't have a problem necessarily with him playing that kind of a game, because I explained to him, you know, what is going on. But it is one of those things that you have to stop and wonder, is this something that we've been gearing towards in the Star Wars gaming community since Episode 3? I mean, Episode 3 was the most darky, grittier, and more, you know, hardcore rated of the games. You know, we saw Anakin get torched, we saw Padawans and younglings dying and things of that nature. And the games, you know, they always do their own telling of these stories and stuff. And we've seen, you know, a progressive move that direction. I don't know if the snapping the neck is, like you say, any different than in The Force Unleashed, where we have a force choke and a snap of the neck. I mean, is it more mature now because it's hands-on than before? Or is this just, you know, now they're finally coming out and saying, you know, we've been making mature games for a while, and we're just going to go there with this one. I mean, I know with a lot of the games, when it comes to the lightsabers and stuff, a big complaint has been, well, I want to see some dismemberment. And Force Unleashed 2, we're having dismemberment! Yeah! You know, but even then, it's like, you know, it came across as, yeah, you're dismembering somebody, but yet it was all in good fun. I don't know. That's where the video game and violence aspect of it is hard for me. Like I said, I grew up a gamer, so for me, when I think of a game, I think of it as a game. I don't see it as reality. So if I'm breaking someone's neck in the game, I'm not going to go out and break somebody's neck on the street or teach my kid how to break somebody's neck. But yet there are those people that are like, well, I learned how to steal a car from playing Grand Theft Auto 3, and I'm just sticking an Uzi out the side of the window in the game, so I was just going to do it in real life because the game told me to. And I don't know. I think that there's that fundamental issue of, you know, is the mature rating going to hurt the game? I honestly, I don't think so. Because when I think about gaming systems, kids, when they're in their teens, are always trying to get those games. They love those games. They can't wait to play those games. And when they do it, they're just like, yes, this is so much fun. And whether they're supposed to be or not, kids are enjoying them. Parents are going out and buying them for their birthday presents, even though they're not 18. I mean, yeah, we have these there. I think the rating system is more for the parents that want to limit what their children are exposed to. In my case with my son and the snapping of the neck, you know, we watch military shows, we watch Supernatural on occasion. I mean, some of the Clone Wars episodes that we've seen on TV, we've seen suicide bombing and stuff. I don't know, maybe society has become more geared where crazy things are normal. I mean, people take bath salts and are suddenly eating people's faces off and no one seems to shake a leg. I mean, I don't know.
Resident Evil 2012. Well, you know, I was actually flipping through my little CD case here, my 360, my Wii, and my PS3 games here, and not counting any stuff that I've got digitally or anything I've sat back to sell on eBay or anything like that that I'm done with, a lot of these games are third-person shooters, and they actually split right around the middle as to whether they are M-rated mature games or T-rated teen games. Things like Gears of War 1, 2, 3, The Resident Evils, Dead Space, yeah, of course, those are M-rated games. Lots of dismemberment, lots of blowing up of heads, lots of zombie-type stuff, or aliens and stuff like that, people being torn to bits. But then I look at, say, Transformers War for Cybertron, or I look at the Uncharted games that have been sort of the benchmark I've been using here. Those are all T-rated games, and they've got characters being blown up. The Uncharted games have the neck-breaking stuff, and yet they're rated as T for teen. I'm not sure where the line really gets drawn, because it seems like sometimes it could sort of teeter-totter on either or, and it does change between countries, too. There are places around the world, Australia being one, for instance, that has a very different standard when it comes to what they'll allow into the video games. So you raised a good question. You said, you know, could this hurt the game? I'm not sure that an M rating would hurt the game. On the other hand, I wonder what would require an M rating, because if the neck-breaking stuff doesn't require an M, what must this include in order to actually rate a real M-rated game? I mean, are we going to be walking through and seeing some Twi'leks actually naked and dancing instead of just dancing in the skimpy clothes? And if that's the case, what happened to Lucas's whole thing about not sullying the Star Wars brand by introducing the nudity and that sort of thing? That's why they don't go after fan films until it gets into that type of territory. They don't go after fan fiction writers until it goes into that territory. Or you take the example of Bei Ling, who was supposed to be in episode, I think it was episode 3, and there was that whole controversy around whether or not she had her scenes cut from the film because she posed in Playboy. And Natalie Portman repeatedly said at one point in time, I forget when it was, we're talking about probably like 2004-ish, that she would not be doing any nude or overly sexualized roles, though some of them still were, because of the way that Star Wars was affecting the career, that she couldn't do that because it would cast negativity on Star Wars because she's associated with it, so until her Star Wars tenure is over with, no nudity and such. I'm not saying we need nudity in any kind of video game or anything like that. That's kind of weird. You know, the nude, yeah. I don't know. It seems odd to me when it's a character that doesn't exist.
That's one of those things that they come at it, they say, well, things that you can get the mature rating for, major violence, lots of blood and gore, sex and drugs. And, I mean, what is something that we just got about the Underworld, you know, live-action TV show from Burnham? Is, you know, we were told flat out that it's going to be, there's going to be hookers, there's going to be, well, prostitution, there's going to be drugs. And so, and I think about the Underworld, and I think about Black Sun and all these things, and we got slavery, we've got the spice trade, we've got all these things. And I definitely have to wonder if, because of where we're at, you know, level 1313 in the Underworld with all the dark bads of the Coruscant, if you might be a drug dealer or a pimp or, you know, there's so many different things that you could probably be doing that could give you the mature rating. I mean, it is interesting, though, to note the breaking the neck is not enough to actually give you that rating. I would have actually thought that that would have been enough. It's one of those things, though, that it gets back to maybe it's the story. You know, we see in one of the scenes there's an R2 unit that's sitting off to the side, and it looks like his dome has either been tore off or removed. And I'm just an EU fan, so I'm always like, what's the story there? You know, I see something odd or something that leaps out, and I want to know what's the story. Discovering what that is part of the fun for me. Now, is the story in this case going to be a much darker and grittier tale than what we've seen before? That could be all we need, added with the action and violence that we get in all the old games that we had that were a T rating, but this one's story is so much deeper and grittier that maybe that's reason for it. Maybe you save a prostitute who was a drug dealer. I mean, I don't know. I could see it going in those directions. I mean, they keep throwing this out there as it's something completely new, and honestly, that is something new. I've hardly seen that in Star Wars. I mean, the closest we get is Cade Skywalker's little drug addiction. I mean, that's about it.
Gamorrean strippers. It makes me wonder if part of why they're already saying, one of the first things they're saying about this game is, oh, it's going to be mature. And games don't get their ratings until quite a ways on. I mean, at one point in any game's lifespan, they almost always have trailers out there where it has an RP, rating pending. They don't know what it's going to be rated yet. I'm wondering if they're saying this to get people ready for something that's grittier, that even if it doesn't get an M rating, maybe it gets a T rating perhaps instead, that maybe what they're doing is trying to basically say, look, parents, or look, people who are expecting normal Star Wars. Normal Star Wars usually waters down a lot of the darkness. Oh, you don't want to sell me death sticks. Cade Skywalker's a death stick addict, but he doesn't really get a whole lot of negative effects from that. I mean, they do the darker stuff. Oh, there's prostitution, there's slavery. Yeah, but we're dealing with it somewhat at arm's length. Even the slavery storyline that we got in Fate of the Jedi, none of those slaves were going through anything even remotely like even slaves in American history were going through.
Yeah.
If they're going to do it as a more realistic take on some of those things, even if it's not M-rated in the vein of, say, Resident Evil, Gears of War, that level of blood and guts, I wonder if it's maybe them sort of preparing people just, hey, this is not going to be something that just because it says Star Wars, you want to have your little kids playing, so that even if they don't wind up getting the M rating later, there's enough of that mentality out there among the possible purchasers of the game and possible players of the game that people kind of know what they're getting into. You're not going to have a parent say, well, I've been hearing about this game and my kid's been talking about it and I want to show it to them. When, you know, if everything you're seeing when you go online is mature, mature, mature about the game's content, then as a parent, it's your stupidity or your lack of caring about that kind of content, depending on your point of view. If you then say, oh, gee, I'm just going to buy the game and give it to my three-year-old.
Here's an example. Okay, my kids, their first gaming experience, Xbox, Grand Theft Auto. My kids were like three. And
you, my friend,
I'm terrible.
Are evil.
I would steal the motorcycle and stuff. I'd put them on it, and I'd let them drive around. And when the cops would get mad, I'd take the controller, I'd put in the code to get the cops to go away, and I'd let them go at it again.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, when I explain that to people, they're like, you devil! You know? And then the other side of it is, like, my kids, both by the time they were three, had watched The Lord of the Rings. I mean, there are certain things that, you know, I don't think about those kind of things. I figure, you know, if I expose it to them early enough, it won't be scary because it's an orc.
Well, Star Wars...
What's scary about an orc?
Star Wars has dismemberment, you know. Star Wars has lots of explosion, people being shot by blasters. It's got brother and sister apparently kissing each other. I mean, there's only so far you can go, I guess, in terms of protecting kids from content, because even some of the most, you know, family-friendly type things, or what we think of as family-friendly classics, will have a tendency to have that kind of stuff. But, you know, in the end, it's all a matter of what works best for, you know, you as a parent and your children. And if this winds up being a game that doesn't seem to fit that, then this is where you say, forget it. But people shouldn't necessarily be decrying it because, oh, well, it's going to be more mature. That's not Star Wars, as some people seem to be doing, you know? What
well,
we see on screen
mature
doesn't...
Adult, there is very little thing Star Wars-oriented that is aimed my way, especially since the New Jedi Order ended.
Well, see, I would say, you know, stuff like Red Harvest and Death Troopers, that sort of is. But you're right, it hasn't gone quite as recently dark as it did for that little, you know, patch there, New Jedi Order, Clone Wars novels and that sort of thing. You know, but we just got to remember that what we see and do in a video game, whether it's a third-person shooter, first-person shooter, fighting game, or platformer, whatever... It's not stuff that we are going to necessarily replicate in our own lives. If that were the case, if you could base a person's behavior on what they spend most of their time in gaming doing, then when I was a little kid, I should have been running around stomping on turtles and kicking their shells at people and jumping up and punching bricks with a combination of my hand and my fist, hoping that a flower would pop out that would let me throw fireballs from my fingertips, or a mushroom that could pop out that while it's running away from me, which seems like I've already had a bad mushroom trip, I'm going to catch and eat so I can become a giant. No.
Well, in that case, I'm going to be one of those bullies that I'm going to knock you on the ground, and as soon as you're on the ground, every time you try to get up, I'm going to kick you and knock you back on the ground over and over and over again. Dozim! Dozim!
Yeah, and don't worry about it. If somebody does die, eventually their body will start to flash and they'll disappear. No need for a morgue. You've got to assume that both you and your children, talking to the audience here, to just the world in general, you got to assume that between you and your children, there is some level of grip on reality. And yeah, kids aren't quite as good at dealing with some things in reality as adults are, even well-balanced adults. But at the same time, you know, you will know better whether or not your kid can handle the reality of a game like this. And I think that this should be a breath of fresh air for Star Wars, and I hope given the fact that it's taking place in the underworld, that maybe this will be opening up a door to some of the stuff we might be seeing in the live-action series, if we ever see the live-action series. I mean, amen. Stranger things have happened. A movie to launch off the Clone Wars cartoon series. Why not a video game to launch off a live-action series? Though, I doubt it.
Well, that'd be cool. You know, now, the one thing, though, in the interview, the guy that was talking about the game actually said that it was mature rated. It was rated M. Do you think that was a slip of the lip? Or do you think that's what they're figuring it's going to be? Or do you think that it full on, they knew it automatically, they were aiming for it, and they were gunning for it?
They could be. I mean, but a game doesn't get rated until there's a game. So, I mean, they could say this is what the content is. This is definitely going to be M-rated. Just like if I made a movie with a lot of blood and guts and sex in it, it's going to be R-rated. That doesn't mean it is R-rated. I think that was sort of one of those just making an assumption based on what is likely to be the case. But it could just be a matter of preparing the audience. I mean, it's to me, it's all a question of, you know, how well will the game work if they're going to go mature? Because you can do mature by just making it more realistic and more gritty, or you can do mature by going over the top and saying, well, since it's mature, we're going to show this. And since it's mature, we're going to have you do this and do all that really over-the-top stuff. It reminds me of, you know, Mortal Kombat at the time. Part of what Mortal Kombat's original creators, Boone and Tobias, wanted to do to differentiate themselves from Street Fighter, and Street Fighter 2 was a huge game at the time, was they instituted all the blood and guts and fatalities and such, and it became
fatality.
The defining thing. Yeah, finish him, and all that stuff. That became the hallmark of Mortal Kombat in everything except for Marvel vs. DC, I guess. Mortal Kombat vs. DC Superheroes, excuse me. I'm getting my franchise
all
mixed up.
Marvel vs. Capcom?
Marvel vs. Capcom, I was getting confused there. But it's been the hallmark. But they did it initially as a way of differentiating themselves, saying, see, we're going to do something bigger. And it was part of that whole storm that created the need for an ESRB, Electronic Software Ratings Board, in the first place. So are they going to, if they're going mature and they're saying, we're going to go for a mature rating, we're not afraid of an M, then okay, are you doing it so that you can say you did it? Or are you doing it because the story necessitates it? If it necessitates it, awesome. If you're doing it just to do it, don't. Because you're going to run into the same crap and the same bad reviews as you've run into on some previous games. You know, reviewers know when you're jumping the shark, and Star Wars has done that enough times. Let's not do it again.
Absolutely. I mean, there are scenes where we watch the blaster blast up the human, you know, in that scene where the wind's whipping by, and you watch the body, the skeleton inside of him light up like Vader. And, you know, it's these things that make me think that, you know, it's going to be a combination of the story and the game playing. It's going to make it grittier. It's definitely something I'm looking forward to. And, you know, as more details come out, we're definitely going to retouch this topic. We will continue to have further updated episodes to kind of explore what we're given. I'm sure we'll see a lot more at Celebration 6, in fact.
Absolutely. Now, remember, folks, you can find our show online at StarWarsReport.com, as well as on our Facebook page. You can find it on iTunes, Zune, and airing on Middle Earth Network Radio. If you like the show, be sure to drop us a review on iTunes or on the Zune Marketplace. We'd really appreciate it. Or you can just fire off an email. You can email us at BeyondTheFilms@StarWarsFanWorks.com. And again, you can interact with us on Facebook and Twitter, both under SW Beyond Films. So, once again, for Star Wars Beyond the Films, this has been Nathan Butler,
Mark, and Whistler.
And may the Force be with you.
And don't quote us the odds. And don't quote us the odds.
Or we'll get all greedy and kill you viciously. Rated M style. Exactly. Rated M for mature. I want to hear that on the end of the Star Wars game. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, and then the same voice. Rated M for mature.
Rated F for fat.
No. Or the Clone Wars announcer, you know, a galaxy torn by war. Watch out, it's blood, guts, and boobs.
Ahsoka, as you've never seen her before.
The reason why the astromech doesn't have the dome attached to it is because there's a bunch of dismembered body parts being hidden inside of it or something.
A bunch of little, tiny little Ewok guys inside of it. There's a little Ewok in there.